So, welcome to Adelaide Chronicles, Richard. It's a platform that's all about a sustainable and inclusive future. And I think you've contributed a fair bit to a sustainable, inclusive future in your lifetime.
I don't know about that. I'd like to think that I've tried to give things a bit of a push where I can, though. Very much so. Yeah, between the music side of things, especially
music
with that.
Music side and no pokies, just... it being about community?
Yeah, very, very, well, it is everything that that's about.
Mm. So I'm really thrilled to be able to do this interview here where I live at Christie Walk, but Christie Walk is also on unceded Kaurna land, and I very much respect that. If you want to start off just telling people who don't know who you are, what you do.
Okay, my name's Richard Tonkin. I am 56 years old, going on 90 this morning. Well, we had a pub Christmas party yesterday. My family have been running the Governor Highmarsh Hotel out in Port Road for the last 28 years. I play in a few bands here and there. I have played in a few bands such as The Borderers, and I've gone travelling overseas playing with Kelly's Revenge Bush Band. And these days, I try and write a bit. I teach ukulele down the pub. Look after the sessions we have Irish music sessions down there, and bluegrass days, and all sorts of things designed to sort of, you know, encourage more people to play music. That's the whole idea of it. Yeah, so I do a bit of that. I keep my hand in a little bit with what's going on. I made myself a concern to a couple of people of about 20 years back when the war stuff was on, because I know some people who like to do things and organise protests and stuff, and it was amazing. I didn't think we'd get followed like that. It was quite interesting. Mm. I had a friend who was up at the army base at Rockhampton, and she got called into an interview, and the men in suits, and the thrust of the interview was because her father and I had been in a band 15 years beforehand. She was being investigated to see what connections I might have to her.
Wow.
I think I just ruffled a couple of feathers here and there, because and my main thing was nothing really, I didn't think anything blindly obvious. In fact, I realised that one night when I was sitting on the dunny listening to the telly, and they were talking about the company that had done the Adelaide Railway to Darwin. And I'd just been reading about that company, which is KBR, a big company. It was the same week that they'd been given the oil field reconstruction contracts in Iraq. And I couldn't work out how the fella who was standing up here with our state premier and going on the train and just doing that little bit was suddenly speaking globally on behalf of a company that had raided a population's treasury of $8 billion. And that's a given. That's a note on what we now know is completely false information, being weapons of mass destruction. They went in on a lie. They took $8 billion out of a treasury, and they were standing here waving flags while they're getting up on the train to Darwin. I thought, Jesus, what the hell's going on here? And just started to fish around from there and put something out to the editor of Crikey, Stephen Mayne at the time, and funnily enough, people hadn't made the association because of the way that integrated into the local community and sponsoring footy teams and whatever. Nobody had really made an association with the Halliburton KBR that was working here with what was going on in Iraq. It was all too far away. But the thing that really got me when I just started to look at it was why in a situation like that, why would a company that huge put their global infrastructure division headquarters into Adelaide? Now, I don't know. Obviously, I'll be slightly careful for legal possibilities because it doesn't hurt. But a lot of companies have a lot of post boxes over the world for different tax purposes, whatever, and we know that happens. But sometimes you have to wonder if, especially when you're involved in war, Sometimes you have to wonder why communications will be going to a completely different city before they go back to your own city. And I don't really know, but I've got a couple of ideas why I think it might be possible, but that's all I could say. But anyway, I couldn't believe that was just happening here a little bit. And the more I started sort of flailing around nationally, nobody had made the association. What's going on in Adelaide? Nothing happens in Adelaide. All business is under. And this was back at a time when even I've met people from other defence corporations who'd say that they'd better get people to come and work in Sydney because everyone wanted to have Sydney on their resume. Nobody cared. No, they couldn't get people to come to Adelaide because nobody wanted Adelaide on their resume. Mm. And now you look at what's going on now. It's going huge, and it's going to be huger. I'm still waiting to hear when Morrison finalises the announced. He telegraphed in February the building of a missile factory here, and that's been coming for a long time too. But this whole thing is just going on right in the middle of this, and we just seem to be totally blasé about it. So, yeah, sorry, I went off on a rant there. I apologise. So I got into things and met some people, and I never did anything. I don't think it was anything illegal at all that I did, but maybe going borrowing a pass and going in as an exhibitor to the Homeland Security exhibition might have been. Please turn up and cut the cameras on that one. But there was a fella named when they were going to organise. Remember that there was that one. That was cancelled because Foley said that it was going to be all these anarchist hoodlums were going to hit Adelaide and well, it was only half bullshit. It wasn't going to be a all that was on the agenda was to appear on the to make sure something made the first three or four stories of the news 3 nights in a row, just to get the message across. And there was nothing any of this, but there were people who'd been known for chaining themselves up flagpoles at G8s and stuff like that, and people were actually practicing to come to Adelaide.
Mm.
So they called it off.
That's right. And I was part of a group that at the time that were labelled ferals.
Yes, everyone was Foley's ferals.
Foley's ferals. Yeah.
And I think we were on the right track. I just don't think it's very good for a city to be sort of totally run by defence corporations.
I think, though, it changed everything about how we do things because so many people came out in protest against us going into Iraq.
Yes.
And they took no notice.
No, how called us a bunch of hippies and we all went home. Mm. And they didn't come out.
And we all went home. And no notice was taken.
Mm.
Whereas there have been events in the past where people come out in force and they change things.
Yep.
But this one didn't. It didn't change anything. And I think that's made it's that's been the beginning, for me anyway, of the polarisation of all of us.
Oh, very, very, very much so.
Yeah.
There was something else going on there. There was no. I mean, George Bush wasn't calling John Howard the Man of Steel and showing him around baseball games and stuff. If you hadn't been doing something, I suspect that the pressure that those rallies created was actually a fair bit.
Mm.
And I think that the pressure that Howard was under to toe the line internationally was a greater pressure. In ordinary circumstances, but in other circumstances, I think that could have actually been a much more of an effective voice. Mm. But it was just squashed. It does help when you've got a national newspaper chain to tell people what to think as well.
What to think, exactly.
Mm.
Exactly. That's why I like this podcast, because it asks people what they think.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, there's a lot of different views that people have on the situation that aren't necessarily the ones that the media are driving for whatever reason they drive it sometimes.
Do you think music has a role in activism?
Oh yes, heavens above! You look at Pete Seeger, and you look at Woody Guthrie, and you look at the amount of people that they look at. Woody Guthrie used to write a song a day, but Pete Seeger was banned, blacklisted in the McCarthy era. You look at the songs that they wrote, and folk songs, folk songs have always been an important part of. You don't have the black and white of the issue. You have the it's the culture that surrounds the issue. I'm waiting
to
my
hands. Do you think it still is?
No. We've nowhere near as much as it used to be.
Mm.
I don't hear many protest songs at all. now. You used to, like at the Gove, people would be, and they'd ask you first if they had something they thought was a bit contentious. They'd come and ask you what the politics of the pub was before you played, which was, good manners. We were quite happy. We were quite happy for people to speak their minds, more or less. We were very happy for speaking for themselves, but it was very nice of them to ask us. But I don't hear. I mean, where's the next Midnight Oil?
Mm.
Yeah, that. I think Midnight Oil were the last protest, proper protest group. Where's the next Red Gum?
Mm.
I mean, Red Gum only worked really well under Liberal governments because when Labor was in, they didn't have anyone to bitch about. But, I don't see it happening again now. I don't know how you drive it. I think you need to actually start thinking about sort of promoting songwriting competitions for kids and stuff and actually getting them to get their heads around the ideas.
That's
and,
a good idea.
And put the... Yeah, I've been giving it a bit of thought lately. I don't know how to do it, but... is songwriting still taught in schools? We got taught how to write poetry in school. Yeah, I don't think that ever happens anymore. Even just how to write basic verse. How are you going to write a song if you've never been encouraged to write a verse? Yeah. Where are the poetry groups? But is Friendly Streets still going? I don't know if Friendly Streets going. They used to put out a book every year.
Yeah, they did. There's more stand-up spoken word.
Yeah, it seems to be more.
But
thing.
I don't know.
But there are outlets, and there was, dare I say it, an infrastructure to support the creativity being expressed. I think it's really, really lacking. People actually aren't encouraged. I mean, if they're not doing it now, the way things are now, and you talk to a lot of like young people, and everyone's sort of pretty not even including COVID, but young people are really quite pessimistic about the global future between climate change and militarisation, everything like that. And you sort of talk to people, and you hear it being discussed on sort of that sort of level a lot. But where are the kids writing songs about it?
Mm.
Do they think that those songs aren't going to get on SAFM, so they're not going to bother? I think I blame commercialism. I blame the lack of promotion of not just local Adelaide music, but Australian music and Australian media. It was a very, very long time there that we had, the only Australian songs that had come out would be the next Fonzie or the next Barnsley, and that'd be about it. And I think maybe these TV shows have helped a bit because they put a few kids' faces on TV.
Yeah,
but they're not doing anything controversial.
No.
And they're not going to. The most controversial thing I thought he sang Blowing in the Wind, but he didn't. He sang... No, I can't think of it. I can't think of the last time I heard a political song on a mainstream TV show. I really can't.
No, on a mainstream TV show.
I think as well you had the union movement used to support.
Yes.
Trade union choirs and I've got a great album at home that the New South Wales BLF did called Rebel Chorus, live on about 1978, and it had all these different people. And and it was actually like, I think it was probably... The first, Red Gum might have had their first album out, but I reckon it actually predates. They were on, and Eric Bogle was on it.
Yeah.
Lots of different people were on. There were songs about the F-111. That's one that's been inspired. You ever heard that one?
Yeah,
F-111, it is the lovely plane. Flies at twice the speed of sound and scatters bombs like rain. Its wings go back and forward. It's the greatest thing around. It's a pity that the bloody thing can't even get off the ground. People don't sing songs like that anymore. And we laughed.
Yeah.
But, and Eric used a lot of what I like, and Eric still is, right? Eric is about the only one. Eric Bogle, I think, is probably the only one
of my... Is he still writing?
He's just putting a new album out as we speak, I think, February. He's just done a new album, and with Pete Titchener and Emma Luca playing fiddle, and I think she wrote one song. But yeah. It's being released in the UK on Green Tracks, and it's coming out in Australia as well in February. So yeah, he's still there. But where's the next Eric Bogle?
Yeah.
Where's the grandson of Eric Bogle?
Yeah.
Where's the granddaughter of Eric Bogle? Yeah. They're not doing it. I think everyone's just worried about entertaining each other when songs can do so much more. Yeah, I think that's what I'm trying to get to.
I think also there's just too much there's so much that's wrong, and like every day I think it can't get worse than it does.
Yeah, it becomes like a big blanket. Mm. So where do you start?
Yeah.
Yeah. But maybe some of the causes, you know, can actually start within their own sort of circle, and maybe out of that you can actually get a bunch of songs sort of, like, you might get a bit of critical mass build up with songs coming out.
And you said that you're doing a bit of writing. What sort of things are you writing?
Not that much these days. These days I'm writing instrumental music.
Okay.
Mucking around with that. Oh, it's whatever I can get my hands on, really. But I'm just sort of just more experimenting with a mix of sort of folk bass and modern instruments. I'm just trying to write my own music that sort of... It's sort of a long-term project. Try and sort of develop some of my own tunes and my own styles a little bit. And mostly that means just sitting in the keyboard in the garage and with the headphones on at 8 o'clock at night going, what happens if I put them together? But just getting back to sort of having a crack at being a bit of a composer. Not writing much lyrically. Did a poem for a book last year. There was an Adelaide-based book that came out. It was called Wear a Mask, Cupid, which is all about online dating during COVID story. It's quite interesting because if there's a Dimmicks around anywhere, I think there's still a Dimmicks out Burnside, is there? Yeah, you can buy it. But I was the only piece of non-prose in the book. My poem was the introduction to it, and now I can't remember it. but off the top of my head, but...
So what was the name of the book again?
Wear a Mask, Cupid. Basically, it's not a bad book. Oh, I can't remember the last verse. Our two hearts beat as one. Then as they do now, the same machine in the intensive care ward keeps us alive somehow. Gives us breath through a tube and acts just like a lung. If you want a song of liberty, this is how it's sung.
Mm.
And it's the only thing I've written. I'm sorry. I just was getting a little bit upset about the anti-mask thing.
Mm.
I suppose people aren't writing pro-mask songs, like pro-anti-mask and anti-vax songs. I'm like the level of look at Adelaide this week. Look at everywhere in Australia this weekend. Not so much here because we're not quite mandatory. They're sort of skirted around, but there's so many people upset about being made to take an injection that they feel they should have the right to not. Where's the songs?
Mm.
Yeah. If people want to be actually sort of have a bit of an organised movement, the first thing they can do is write a couple of songs, put them back, go broadsheet, you know, pick a song, get into copyright trouble, pick a tune that somebody knows, as long as you're not... But get people singing a song of what you're trying to tell them. And I'd like, great. If you don't like vaccine and you don't like having to wear a mask, sing me the song.
Mm. Don't just rant and rave.
Yeah, sing me the song.
You said something before when we were talking of someone that came into the Gov and said for 10 minutes I was just a ukulele player.
Oh, yes. No, that was somebody who was working as a clinician in a hospital. Right through community music, you run into a lot of people who work in professions where they are intensively involved with the public on a stressful level. They go and get a uke and go out and play. And as this lady said the other night, for 2 hours I wasn't a clinician.
Mm.
Yeah, you just get a chance just to tune off. And I think it's very important to people's psychological well-being. I play 15 instruments. I must be a basket case.
You play 15 instruments?
I play 15 instruments, yeah. Not particularly well, but I play... Mainly I play keys and bass and... button accordion and fiddle, bit of mandolin and guitars and odds and sods.
So music's really important to you?
Oh, I think it's... I don't understand why it's not... It's so unimportant to everyone else these days. Like, it used to be such an intrinsic part of, you know, everyday life. And I do blame the commercialisation of it because it has become... Yeah, it's become a product to sell cars with.
Mm. Is the Gov at any risk of becoming more corporate?
No.
That's good to hear.
No. It's, that's never going to happen. a lot of the shows that come throughout the back, or will be starting to come throughout the back. So we have we sort of subsidise ourselves by a lot of the larger shows that we do out the back, the venue shows, and yes, they are like whatever's this current incarnation of Boney M with the last standing backing vocalists and whatever, but it's all good fun and a lot of people enjoy it. But that music also provides us with a way of keeping all the other kinds of music that we came to, and we came to it there for a reason. We came there deliberately to try and keep music that wasn't so commercially viable out in the keep it out in the public eye, so that when new kids come along, they could actually still see it and had a chance of picking up and continuing. And that was our entire rationale for going to the Gov in the first place. That they still do get to see folk and bluegrass and this and that and actually see real people actually playing them, and they're not just on the TV, because if it's not actually in your physical world, it's just on the screen. I don't think it really becomes as real and as part of your thing as it could be. Yeah, every family used to, every kid in the family on the farm had learned an instrument. Yeah, all of that.
Yeah,
we've lost a lot by that not happening. And to me, Uke's a great vehicle for working through to do that, because they are so bloody easy to learn. You can actually give somebody who hasn't been playing an instrument all their life something to play. And that's why I think it's been so popular with a lot of retirees, because they've got the time, the kids have grown up, and they're looking for a hobby. And they pick up a uke, and suddenly they can play music, and they tell you how psychologically empowering it is. Yeah, you know, it's such a huge, big thing. They didn't know they could do it. They can sit and entertain themselves, and they can play along with their friends, and suddenly it's a whole new vista of social interaction that they just haven't come across before. And it's a big, big thing.
And it's happy.
And it's happy, yeah, yeah.
You can't be sad and play the uke. It just doesn't work.
No. No, and it spreads, and it's a pleasant kind of virus. It is a very we infected Queensland, which was good fun. had a friend who I used to be in a band with come down to visit, and he came along to one of the uke nights, and he was living up Sunshine Coast, so we went up there, and now there's a group called the Sunshine Coast Ukulele Masters, and there's 1,000 of them. It's amazing. I went to the festival a couple of years ago, and I was doing a couple of workshops, and walking down the street, this lady walks up and says, "Apparently this is all your fault."
I love it.
And I felt so good.
Ukulele-itis.
No, it's all right. I'm quite happy to fit people with that one.
Yeah, that's fabulous.
And I think it's actually been important too for, like, some of the clubs have shut down, but I think it's been important for a lot of those people too who have been in isolation and stuff. Yeah. I think the sales have gone up quite well of anything you can do at home, but uke is just, like I say, they say with folk, any folk instrument, that it's a minute to learn and a lifetime to master. And wouldn't go that far with uke, but 5 minutes and a little bit of practice can go a hell of a long way. And you are instantly playing a song. And people, well, say it's a big thing to people.
So, and tell us about your uke nights.
Uke nights, every Wednesday night, range of people in age from about 16 through to 70-odd, and all points in between. Because of the ethic that I've been talking about, I make a bloody big point of just trying to drag whatever kid I can in to sit down and have a listen, and some stay and some go on their way, but we have a really good age group of people. And what I do, I stream it when the camera's working properly, or I'm working the camera properly, whatever. But I've been streaming right through lockdown, since that first lockdown. And I do like a bit of a lesson or a bit of a workshoppy thing at the start. But generally after that, just throw a blackboard up and invite people to come up and do songs. On the beginner's night, we do a beginner's, specifically tailored beginner's night once a month. Tell people that you don't need any musical experience to start a ukulele. You don't need to have even know what a note is. You, you, you can pick all that rubbish up later. So we get people in who, there are some people that do go home and practice, they're fully entitled to, as long as they don't bother us with their rubbish. No, but there's all sorts of standards of people, and a lot of them, I've noticed a lot over the years, that a lot of people who take up nuke are not really particularly extroverted. In fact, probably they probably spend a lot of time in their own heads.
Okay.
So I've sort of found with the nuke nights, when they started, you walk into a room and it'd all be really quiet. So I used to sort of like leave it 5 minutes late, 2 minutes late, and talk and hear a conversation. I'd let the conversation go for 5 minutes and get them talking to each other. Even if they're talking about what's that bastard doing sitting at the bar there. There is method in the madness occasionally, and it's evolved into quite a sociable group of people. And I think that's really, really good. We're just about to break up for Christmas in a minute. They also get the chance to practice performing to each other and on the stage. And even, not a lot of people watch the stream, but it's really quite surprising. Had a group come up from near Wellington. What's the next town from Wellington along the river there, on the lake there? Okay, I've seen this moment. But during that last little lockdown, the pub was shut, and I was sitting in a shack on the other side of the lake doing a live stream of a ukulele lesson on a Wednesday night. On the other side of the lake, there were 20 people in the homes watching it. I don't know if anyone else in the world was.
Oh, that's
fantastic. But Lake Alexandrina, we had a nuke night that night.
Oh, that's really good.
They came up to the pub a few weeks ago. Great mob. I just can't remember. Malang. But Malang's got a great little core of people going, some fun. And so we've decided we'll find a hall and we'll go down between the Adelaide Ukulele Appreciation Society, and they haven't even got a name. But they'll give themselves a name. And we'll go down and put a concert on. And you can do that. If you run into like-minded people, you can do this sort of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So has your streaming got a name? Is something people can look up?
No, but if you just... at the moment, I just do it off the Governor Harmarge Facebook page, and we put it up on the Adelaide Ukulele Appreciation Society Facebook page.
Okay.
You can get onto either of those, and it runs off that. And that's Wednesday nights. About seven. And at any time people are, you see a small group of people watching it live, but it's usually to the next 2 or 3 days you see people watching. But I'm surprised. I'm really pleased that people are actually sitting in their homes having a go at it.
Yeah, yeah.
But then they've got to take the next step and come out and face us.
Yeah.
The people who get up and sing songs are all at different standards, but they get better by doing it.
Yes.
Finally watching people put their music stands aside and sing for memory, which I think is very important. I think it's very important to learn songs. But it becomes, again, the point of it is it becomes like its own little musical culture. And it becomes, and what we were talking about, it becomes a off-screen reality that you're interacting in.
Yes.
And that's what we haven't been having for a while that much. And certainly
so
about life.
When the Uke night closes for Christmas, the pub will still be open.
Yeah, the pub will be open till pretty much up to Christmas Eve. When we'll be open for New Year's Eve, we go pretty quiet around there. We don't do a lot around about there. But the pub will be open, and the Uke Club will just break up for a couple of weeks at Christmas. I'm just doing a slightly early party just for luck, just in case things go skew if, and we're doing it all by streaming, because it's very hard to drink champagne by streaming. Yeah. You just can't get the glass clink.
You definitely can't sing on Zoom because there's that 2 second lag.
Yeah, we almost made it. I reckon by the lockdown in 2030, we'll have the technical. We'll have holograms then.
It'll be all fit.
I suppose it will be. It'll be like Star Wars. You'll have you'll all be sitting around a table with empty chairs, and everyone's holograms will be sitting at the chairs playing with you.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
Oh, well, it's better than nothing.
It is better than nothing.
And I think that's what's been really driven home by this whole damn coronavirus thing. People have realised that doing it technologically is just not anything a patch on being face-to-face in a room.
It's all about community.
Yeah, it's all about community.
Yeah.
And
I think that's wonderful.
It's happened that way, but it's good. That it's probably one of the good things that's happened out of the people are actually aware that we are a gregarious animal.
Yes, and we need each other.
Yep, and we need to work collectively to survive, and all of the things that we probably hadn't been paying much attention to for a while.
Exactly.
And you can see that awareness, but I think there's still that room for that next step, with the next step being to actually, I think a lot of musical culture has a chance to have a bit of a reboot, right?
Mm.
I really do. I can see a few things. Like, I'm off to a bluegrass and acoustic festival very soon, and you get the impression that apart from the people who are going to watch the concerts, but there's a lot of musos going because it's down at a lovely spot. It's down at Wirrana in the camping ground there. And they're going to sit around and play music to each other and talk to each other.
Oh, wow.
And be there. And I haven't felt this much of a buzz around about a festival for donkey's ages.
Mm.
Yeah, it's brilliant that people want to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. I'd like to think that maybe through this venue we could do a bit of a call out for people to start thinking about more about that.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. I think
writing songs, about getting together to write songs together.
Yeah. Little songwriting sort of collectives in different organisations, whatever.
I reckon that's a great way to go.
Well, it's what even the great writers used to do it. Easy example, and we're not talking songs in this case, but you'd have people like, for example, Tolkien and C.S. Lewis, whatever, used to sit in a bar and read the stuff to each other.
Yeah.
And there was an interaction, and people then went and did their own things, but they still had that, not network, but net of culture. Yeah, so it would be great if things can be done to encourage that.
I think this is a step in the right direction.
I think it's a step in the right direction. Yeah. Keep our heads ticking over.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
Should we leave it there?
Yeah, let's leave it there. That's good.